Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Trending Topics podcast. The year is not yet 4 weeks old, and there are already almost 10 new unicorns in Europe. Will this trend continue, and what do investors say about the trends of the year? I discuss this today with Eva R. and Petra Moravkova from FreeVC, a startup and scale-up investor from Austria that is investing in whole Europe. Welcome, Eva and Petra, in this podcast episode.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for bringing us here.
Thank you for joining today. So before we get into details of the startup trends of 2022, our listeners want to get to know you. Eva, please tell us, how did you get into the investors business, and how does your usual workday look like?
Well, so I ended up being a VC after I have seen the other sides of the table. So very early on after my studies, I actually joined a startup here in Austria, learned a lot by doing, and that was basically the time when I realized and I fell in love in tech and understood that I want to stay in the space. And afterwards, I again changed the side of the table and joined here in Vienna, the biggest deep tech incubator of Austria, in it. And that's where I had the chance to help several companies, mostly very academic ones, to get going with fundraising, customer development. And during that time, I got to know Peter, who is one of the founding partners of 3VC, since he was basically building up and managing the AWS Gründer Fonds, or AWS Founders Fund. I think that's the English name for that. And as he approached me together with Roman and introduced me to the idea of 3VC, which basically is about supporting the companies here in the region, in DACH and CEE, on their journey of going for global leadership, for me, it was a no-brainer to again switch the sides, because coming originally from Latvia and looking at Estonia and what Skype did to the Estonian ecosystem, because there hasn't been just one waterfall now, but already several generating Pipedrive, Bolt, and other companies, I truly believe that we need more of those success stories here in the region. And I think with 3VC, we are a small puzzle piece of those stories. So that's why in 2017-18, I joined the 3VC team. And very happy that we have grown so far and had got Petra on board as well recently.
Mm, awesome. Petra, what's your story? How did you get into the investors business?
So I'm the newest addition of the 3VC team. So I joined in October, and prior to that, I was working on cybersecurity in a product marketing role where I was responsible for basically kind of where we're investing in similar stage to making sure that we nail the product market fit, and then how do we grow further the product. And there's so many issues, and so I'm kind of like familiar with this phase, and also having a lot of like market intelligence, and we're looking at you know, like competition and how do we really position ourselves well, and what are maybe also some of the, you know, startups that are coming in the scenes and we should be worried about. So kind of like monitoring that vertical and then eventually looking at perhaps this is something what we would like to acquire. And so I think that time that when I was kind of actually getting more familiar with the VC scene and just kind of realizing how much impact you can really drive when you're sitting on the other side of the table, rather than when you're kind of focused on one vertical. And then actually, before I did product marketing, I was in product design. And I think that's like, I'm super passionate about building really products that people love. And this is kind of a perspective that I'm trying to often connect from the VC perspective with the founders, you know, like being able to talk with the same language and really looking at how do they drive their product development and how do they bring like users' insights into building roadmaps. This is something that I'm like extremely passionate about. And yeah.
He always has the best, you know, product related questions. So I love her challenging the product guys and girls of the startups that we are looking at.
All right. So tricky questions for the founders out there from your side.
Well, not tricky, maybe just eye opening or, you know, challenging ones.
and just right, maybe yeah. Perhaps I'd add like one thing. I'm so happy to be part of the 3VC team, because I feel like, you know, like each of us has very like diverse operational background, and so the team is very complementary, and I just feel like it's really nice to connect with the founders from various aspects, to be just like able to understand things and challenges that they're going through, and so this is I just really feel to be happy in the team.
Okay, so FreeVC is operating out of Austria, but you have a very international team, and also the portfolio is very international. It's not just Austrian startups. So for 2022, what plans and goals do you have at FreeVC? How many investments will you make, and which verticals are you most interested in?
Maybe I can start with that. So we are one of those funds that actually remain loyal to its core strategy during the time when kind of the market dynamics are, you know, changing a lot and the pace is increasing and funds invest earlier and later compared to before. So we continue doing 3-4 deals a year. So very focused, very selective. We continue investing in DACH and CE, even though I think we see that CE is becoming very, very interesting. And if in the fund one, it was, I would say 50-50, we see that it might be a bit more in Eastern Europe going forward. And I think for 2022, we again, we'll be doing 3-4 investments. We are growing our team a bit. So that is also something that we are executing on at the moment, hiring and interviewing people. And also the fund two is basically then, you know, is being shaped at the moment. And that's basically 2022 will be the vintage year of that one.
Mm-hmm. Pedro, so you are focused on cybersecurity. Will this be like the new vertical that FreeVC is going into?
Like it's a vertical that we're actively looking into, but at the same point, I feel like we're very like industry agnostics. And obviously, I mean, like IT security is one of the topics that we're like, there is always a need, and so there's like several layers that we're looking into, and interesting companies that we've been talking to, but I would not say like that's the vertical that would be the one and only. We're kind of also remain that we're, you know, it's like a very it's a variable. So you look at the market, the team, and like you're trying to build convictions and chemistry, and then everything needs to kind of fall together.
I think that like thinking about the industries, and that also maybe relates a bit to the predictions that we had, like there are some topics where we just, that we are continuously excited about, be it digital health, for example. This is something that is a trend, not trend, but this is coming, this is being accelerated by COVID, but that's something that we spent, you know, our time on 2 years ago, and we'll be spending our time on also during the next 5 years. And then there are some topics where you really feel a very strong why now, like the fact that we see so many companies, especially SMEs, looking for ways how to leverage the data that they have. So we feel this need for tools and solutions that enable a broader group of people to work with data, not just having SQL engineers and data scientists in the team. So for some topics, that's really strong why now, where we say this is something we want to deep dive into at the moment. And then there are some topics like cybersecurity, digital health, that we are just continuously looking at, and, you know, being open to having a conversation with founders in the field.
Mm, okay. At FreeVC, you made some predictions for 2022. And one of them is, as far as I read, is that you said that everything will be tokenized. So that's, of course, connected to blockchain and crypto. But what does this tokenization mean for you? What can we expect in this space?
Well, I think it means that people are getting enabled and things are becoming less central and more decentral. And we see that some of the companies, they really then want to engage their communities, the contributors around, and build and share the success of those companies, instead of actually taking maybe a few investors, give them equity, but saying, look, we want to address that big problem. You are excited. You share the same passion. Like, become part of this. So that's, I think, when organizations will get decentralized, we're talking about decentral organizations, and their token is maybe for governance. But then there are also other applications, like some of the examples that we shared in the music industry, that you really just make sure that the upside is distributed in a more equal way. So basically, there are a lot of use cases where this really makes sense. I think there are also use cases where maybe it's more hype than actually having a real, I would say, utility. And that's also something why we as a fund, so our latest investment, it has been in a infrastructure layer of blockchain, so enabling a lot of companies to implement blockchain functionality without having the programming language knowledge of Solidity. So we feel excited to bet on the infrastructure layer, but we are still a bit kind of, I would say, shy away from the end applications because that's where there's a lot of hype. I think we wouldn't invest in a company that is not doing NFTs just for a certain thing because that's too vertical at the moment and it's hard to feel how long the hype stays there and if there's also actually some real value behind it. I don't know, Petra, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I would add 2 cents. So the first one will be, I think it will be widely open for more people, for like mass markets, that it will just get less geeky. And then you see it that there's like a lot of commercial brands, Nike or Adidas, basically kind of entering this space, and it will create more trust for people to eventually be kind of less skeptical around that. And just, you know, that will open up more doors eventually for people to get in. And the second one is like, what is actually interesting as well is that I feel like there's a Web2, as it's being called, there used to be like a sharing economy, Airbnb, Uber, those ideas where it's kind of like a peer-to-peer, like it enables you to earn money. And nowadays you see this on blockchain that people can basically earn for providing internet and exchanging tokens. And so like you see this like very different use cases, but it's still kind of the sharing economy and just on different infrastructure.
Mm. That's interesting because there is a lot of discussion going on about like Web3, something that's like the mega trend of the next years. Others say, well, that's just a marketing buzzword, forget about it. What's your opinion on it? Do you take Web3 for like a real thing?
I think one has to be careful with that. I think Web3 is there to stay in certain verticals for certain applications. In the past years, talking to people that have been in the space since it started, and let's say for 5 to 10 years, they are telling me, you know, be aware, there's so much scam out there and so much hype. So you really have to try to get to the basics. But I think it's there to stay. But probably we won't see some of the applications in the long term that we see today. And there is also a big debate or different opinions. So will Web3 really be decentralized, or are there then again a few emerging players in between that will kind of enable access to Web3 to everyone? And again, we are in a centralized world. So it's too early to say, I think, like what exactly will happen, but it's definitely there to stay. But I think you just cannot take it for, okay, Web3, that it's everything. And there's, I think, much more color to that.
Mm. So when we talk about Web3, we also have to talk about the metaverse. It's also one of these big, big buzzwords. Microsoft just this week announced it would pay almost $70 billion for gaming giant Activision Blizzard. And Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, he said, gaming has a key role in the development of metaverse platforms. Do you think he's right?
I mean, we have the privilege of being also shareholders in Animoca Brands, and they are basically riding the wave of gaming and blockchain and metaverse and NFTs, and seeing how they evolve. So, and I think this is the first use case where this really gains adoption and also educates the market. So it's true that I think gaming is riding the trend and spreading the, I think, understanding and knowledge around the metaverse, about non-fungible tokens and so on. So it's very, very exciting to observe how dynamic the market today is. And I feel that many startups now just try to incorporate the word metaverse into the pitch decks. It was the same, I think, 3 years ago with blockchain. And again, then it's our job to filter out like where it really makes sense and where they just try to make a story around the hype.
I would agree here with Eva. I think certain industries, they have their early adopters groups, and in this case, it's really the gamers who are kind of like driving this forward, and then we'll see more innovations and eventually adoptions in other groups. But yeah, it comes from gamers here in this case.
It looks like retail is coming in as the second, because now there are some big brands that open up their shops into the metaverse. I think it was H&M now one that announced it recently, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm, I think also Walmart is working on it, according to rumors. But let's see how they will do it.
And like, digital fashion and like you see more things eventually, but it's going to be more, let's say, trial and error attempts.
One basic question. So of course, some years ago I used to game a lot, and for me, like, the metaverse as I imagine it, it's like a 3D world, like games look like, and I go there not just for gaming but maybe to meet other people virtually, maybe to buy stuff. Is this the metaverse, or how do you imagine it?
I imagine metaverse really enabling people to interact with others and feeling like being in the same place, actually by not being there in the real world. And I think for us, maybe it doesn't change that much, because, you know, we have been able to travel to meet people on Zoom and so on. But I think for other people that haven't had, you know, the privilege maybe to be that much around and being exposed to so many different experiences, that is really, you know, a game changer. But yeah, that's how I feel it. You can start with gaming, but then, you know, you could travel in the metaverse. You can meet people in metaverse. There is a great video of DappRay, their Lithuanian company, where they announced their token, and it was done in metaverse. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool just to watch. And I think that gives you a glimpse how that could look like in the future. But today it's still the early days. So, Peter, how do you see the metaverse?
I think 2018, there is this movie Ready Player One, which I remember I watched, and I was like, I was skeptical this is gonna happen so soon. And right now I'm just convinced that this is how it's going to look like.
Okay, so you both are betting on the metaverse, as I understand.
I think it's coming. Like, for me personally, it's still hard to imagine that I would also be adopting that, because it kind of feels like, you know, what's in it for me or why? But I won't be surprised if, you know, 1 or 2 years from now, that will be part of some of, like, of our weekly routine. I mean, now one of the people that we work with on the PR, he was saying, you know, he's playing golf with his friend who is in another, you know, city in the US, and that's so cool. And who knows? And I think if we are locked down for a longer period of time, there might be even more curiosity to explore that.
And to be frank, I think, like, we'll see a lot of these trends coming from Asia, because that's the culture that, you know, it's been there for years, basically. And then this will just, like, enable to be more augmented and really connected with offline and online. And then it's going to be seamless almost. And so I think, like, that's where we're going to see, like, the most innovations in that matter. What does it mean for real life? Because I think there it's somewhat already is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as investors, as VCs, of course, you always have to be a step ahead of us all. So how do you get this information? What comes next? I mean, do you read a lot of books? Do you travel to China to see the future? How does that work?
So I used to live in Shanghai. That's for 2 years. And for me, that was really... like seeing, you know, there is a lot of food delivery when it was not a thing in Europe. And there is a lot of, like, scooters, like, there's not even like Uber that time, and it was there. And so like, you could see a lot of things there. And then I think what we see kind of connects is this one trait that people are curious. And so they're just craving to learn new knowledge and, you know, meeting with people and just kind of possibly also being visionaries and just reading weird stuff that people usually would not believe. And just hanging out with, like, diverse but also like-minded group. It's, yeah, so I think it's that. And yeah.
And in addition to that, it's also a lot about really engaging with different stakeholders, understanding what are their pains, be talking to corporates and different departments to see what are the pain points, what are they trying to solve, or talking to consumers. So often we just see if we realize there is a problem that couple of people or business are experiencing, then that means, okay, we should look deeper into that, like what could be the solutions. But I think it's also different when you invest at Series A, when you invest in pre-seed, because when you invest in pre-seed, which we don't do, I think then it's even way more about being visionary and curious and thinking, you know, 10 years ahead. Because I know that pre-seed investors are telling us, like, if there's already hype on something, it's definitely too late for them, you know, to invest.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we started the conversation, I said that 2021 was a damn good year for European startups. I think the 100 billion euros have been invested on the continent. There were almost 100 new unicorns in Europe. What do you think? Will we see a continuation of this trend in 2022?
I think in general, yes. What we also have seen is really the concentration of capital. So in general, it is the best time to be a founder. I think nobody argues about that. But what is also a reality, there is still a very high percentage of companies that don't actually feel this way and feel this abundance of capital. So it's mostly the founders that really operate in very hot markets that also manage to create a certain FOMO around their rounds. So that is really what's happening in the market. And those are those companies that actually then raise really huge rounds at very, very high valuations, at high multiples, that has been going up a lot in 2021. I think that will continue. I mean, it's funny also to see that since a few days when the stock market is a bit down, you already feel that, you know, investors are talking about the high valuations. Like, is this reasonable? Like, is this something that we can do? So there might be a correction in the valuations, but then it will take the whole market to follow with that trend, because if there are still funds that don't care about the valuations, then there will be founders that will optimize for that and go with that. But there was a lot of capital being raised in 2021, a lot of new funds being incorporated. So there is a lot of money to be deployed in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years. So I think we'll definitely continue seeing this trend. So it is a really great time to build a company.
I agree. And perhaps I would add to that, that it's more like a founder's market nowadays, that founders have the upper hand to actually choose like who they want to partner up with and like what is actually what makes the VC stand out, because they're just so like oversubscribed and they have so much inbound from various VCs, and there is like new VCs also coming in. That's quite interesting to hear this from their perspective as well, because they would often challenge you. So what is your differentiator? Like, you know, like they would kind of ask the question that we would usually challenge them as well. So
So now the VCs are pitching to the founders, not the other way around.
Yes, also.
Yeah, it's often the case.
Okay, that's interesting. Eva, you just mentioned an interesting topic. You said there might be a correction this year. And of course, in 2021, investors were willing to pay really high multiples on revenue and other metrics. So is there a bit of a danger that there might be a bit of a bubble in this unicorn space?
Yes. I mean, it's good for the ecosystem, I think, in general, that we see those dynamics. But I think it's impossible that all those companies will actually deliver to the valuations they have raised. So I hope, you know, that most of them will too. But I don't think that everybody will manage to deliver, because there has been a lot of hype and FOMO around those rounds. So I think we will see also an implosion of that. What is a bit challenging is that Europe is not that used to downrounds. In the US, it's not such a big thing, but Europe, I think, is still kind of learning about that. So I'm curious to see what will happen to those unicorns that maybe don't deliver and don't manage to raise the next round at a higher valuation. So that might be a new learning for the ecosystem as well. But I think there will still be those rounds that get raised at very, very high valuations. But I think that investors will become a bit more cautious this year. Already last year, we also heard US funds saying pro 2021 vintage might be a challenging one, and then we should slow down a bit because we have done a lot of investments at very high valuations. So people are reconsidering at the moment. But I said it would take that most of the VCs rethink that, because if some rethink and some don't, you know, there will be still enough money that will invest at very flexible valuations, let's put it that way.
How do you as investors make sure that you don't pay too high multiples? Is there like a rule of thumb to...
I mean, for us, and I think for most of the funds, we have to believe and see the potential that every investment can return a fund. So the entry valuation is part of that equation. And what we see that still in Central Eastern Europe, the valuations are more reasonable. Also Germany, actually Austria, that's still fine. Berlin, I would say, is a bit more hyped, and that's where you really see those sometimes 200x, you know, multiple on revenue at the Series A stage. And I think it also depends on the portfolio. We having a rather small portfolio, we have to be more reasonable about around that compared to a fund that maybe does, you know, 100 investments. So we really have to, we are making sure that every investment can return a fund. There must be this potential.
Okay. All right. So let's do another final prediction for 2022. So in the end of 2021, I made the bet that Austria will get 5 new unicorns in 2022. What is your bet?
I know about one in making.
Okay, which one is it?
I don't know if there are 4 more.
Okay.
I would say there will be 3 more, fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Petra, what about you?
Well, I'm still getting familiar with the local scene here as I just move in here. But yeah, hopefully there's going to be more. And I'm like, generally, I'm just like excited for the, you know, whole, because I move in here from Prague, and I feel like that it's just every year is just bigger, greater, and you know, kind of a ripple effect. So I like what I hope that there's going to be ripple effects, more people just more motivated to build new cool things. And yeah.
Yeah, I think what's more important that we see those, you know, waterfalls, that we see experienced managers that learn that those fast growing companies, that they come out and build their companies, and that there is cash flowing into those. I think that's more relevant than having, you know, 1, 2, or 5 more unicorns. I'm happy, like, but all this is positive, and I think that Austria is really at a point where things are starting to move in the right direction. And I think it will be a very exciting year.
Great. Eva and Petra, it was great talking to you. Thanks for the interview.
Thank you. It was great being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, that have been Eva R. and Petra Moravkova from FreeVC, a startup and scale-up investor in Austria that is investing in whole of Europe. Thanks for listening today, and hear you soon.